there is a mutual understanding that the engagement should continue, but it's on the Iranian side to let us know how they want to proceed.
The Iran-U.S. conflict's not quite over, at least not yet. It's Friday, January 10th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Also coming up this half hour, a possible solution to China's mystery pneumonia outbreak. Taiwan gets ready to vote, and social media fueling desire for more democracy. That and more, all on today's VOA Asia. While tensions appear to be easing, at least for the moment, between the U.S. and Iran, appearances can be deceiving. President Donald Trump says that Iran appears to be, quote, standing down, but some Iranian authorities are suggesting that this week's ballistic missile strikes into Iraq may only be the beginning. And if there is confusion between Tehran and Washington, much of the rest of the world is struggling to make sense of where things go from here. From London, Henry Ridgewell reports.
While America's European allies were not given advance warning of the attack on Iran's top general, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson said his country would not lament Soleimani's death. Britain, like the US, is among the nations that suffered at his hands, say analysts.
Qasem Soleimani has been responsible for the deaths of hundreds of American troops and other Western troops, including British troops.
As tens of thousands mourned in Iran, Britain, France and Germany issued a joint statement calling on all parties to exercise utmost restraint and responsibility. The European Union has invited Tehran's foreign minister to Brussels in a bid to defuse tensions.
There is a mutual understanding that the engagement should continue, but it's on the Iranian side to let us know how they want to proceed.
Europe hopes the 2015 Iran nuclear deal can be saved, despite Tehran's announcement that it will now disregard all restrictions on its nuclear enrichment activities.
In my view, I don't think the deal is dead until there's an escalation that leads to war.
Iran has pledged military retaliation, and U.S. allies fear they could also be targeted. NATO has suspended its training mission in Iraq, numbering several hundred troops, part of the Western coalition to defeat Islamic State. The alliance's Secretary General refused to comment Monday on whether NATO allies would support the United States in any conflict with Iran.
We have recently seen an escalation by Iran, including the strike on a Saudi energy facility and the shootdown of an American drone. At our meeting today, allies called for restraint and de-escalation. A new conflict would be in no one's interest.
Russia and China both condemned the killing of Soleimani. Analysts say Tehran could now seek greater support from its allies.
Before this escalation, China, Russia, and Iran actually held naval exercises in the Persian Gulf and the Gulf of Oman.
In the Middle East, anti-U.S. protests have spread from Iran and Iraq to Turkey, the Palestinian territories, and Lebanon. Protesters also took to the streets in Pakistan. Meanwhile, Iran's longtime foe, Israel, praised the U.S. action.
President Trump is worthy of all appreciation for acting decisively, swiftly, and with strength.
All eyes are now on Iran and whether it will heed global calls for restraint or fulfill its pledge to exact revenge. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. China's economy czar will visit Washington next week for the signing of an interim trade deal. Residents in the path of wildfires raging southeast Australia were urged to evacuate Thursday if they don't intend to defend their homes. A group of foreign diplomats based in New Delhi visited Indian Kashmir for the first time after India scrapped the region's special status 5 months ago. And Pakistan and China have launched a major joint naval drill in the Arabian Sea to deepen their security cooperation. You can read and watch more on VOA Asia Facebook and Twitter. as well as our website, voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. Well, as busy news weeks go, this is one for the record books. We're joined here in studio now by Jeff Selden, VOA's national security correspondent. Jeff, there's a great deal I have to ask you about, probably more than we have time for. But the very first thing is there's news coming out of Washington today and Canada that fingers are being pointed at Iran or Iranian rebels in the downing of that Ukrainian plane. What can you tell us about that?
U.S. officials have confirmed to VOA that they believe that the most likely scenario for how the Ukrainian Airlines flight went down was that Iran fired surface-to-air anti-aircraft missiles, which hit the plane, causing it to crash. And that has now been that is also being presented by Canada. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau late on Thursday came out and he said that is the overwhelming evidence pointing to that scenario. The British Prime Minister Boris Johnson just put out a statement a little while ago also affirming that the most likely scenario is that the Iranians shot the plane down, although both the American officials that we've spoken to and the British officials are saying it appears that the shootdown was unintentional. During the news conference in Canada, the Prime Minister Justin Trudeau was asked several times, do the Americans bear any responsibility for this situation? And all he would say is that he reiterated his call for a clear and thorough investigation. He said Canadian officials are on their way to Turkey right now, and they've been given assurances that they'll be given visas so they can get into Iran. Iran, though, is saying that these allegations amount to nothing more than what one of their ministers called information warfare, though they've publicly invited Boeing, which made the plane, to come and take a look at the wreckage as part of the investigation.
Do you think that this is something that may, in the end, turn to ratcheting tensions back up between Washington and Iran?
It always has that potential. It's a volatile region, and there's always a chance when you have leaders who are using rhetoric like President Trump, like many of the Iranian-backed militias who are in the area while they're in Iraq. They've been using a lot of rhetoric, even some of Iran's own initial rhetoric calling for a harsh response. There's always a danger that a spark could turn this into a much bigger conflagration. But it's interesting that if you listen to what President Trump, President Donald Trump from the U.S. had to say on Thursday, what the Prime Minister of United Kingdom, Boris Johnson, said, they said it appears this would have been unintentional. Nobody is saying that Iran did this on purpose as an act of provocation. So already there, you see officials starting to lay the groundwork to make sure that this does not get out of hand.
Well, listening to what people are saying regarding this larger conflict, a day or two ago, President Trump said that it appeared that Iran was, quote, standing down from further conflict or confrontation. However, the deputy head of the Iranian National Guards was quoted as saying that the missile attacks were a display of Iran's military power, said U.S. forces couldn't do darn thing, and he's pledging harsher revenge soon. So what's the story? I mean, are we out of the woods on this yet?
This is going to go on for some time, and a lot of the undercurrents that led to the situation aren't going to come to an end anytime soon. But there are two types of actions that officials look at. There's the official response, the government sanctioned response. And that's what we saw with the Iranian airstrikes against the bases in Iraq that host U.S. and coalition forces, the missile attacks against Al-Assad Air Base, and also against the base in Erbil. That was the officially sanctioned Iranian government response, which Iran has said is done with. But the other thing that officials in the U.S. and in the West look at very carefully is what is going to happen with the proxy forces, with some of the forces that Iran influences, somewhat controls, but doesn't have a final say over. And that's where some of the concern is. There's also concern, though, that the Iranian government, while it may be done with what military officials describe as kinetic action, with military action that you can see, rocket launches, any sort of attack.
Things that go boom.
Right. There's still a major concern among U.S. officials who are bracing for some sort of response in cyberspace. And there are two ways that they're looking for that. One is already starting to happen. There's a lot of misinformation or disinformation out there. where there's information. The Kuwaiti news agency said it was hacked. People are wondering, was that Iran? There's also concerns that there will be some sort of cyber attack where Iran will use information it's gathered over the last few years to target perhaps U.S. infrastructure or even Western companies in a way that could impact the U.S. as well as countries all around the world.
Jeff, thank you so much, and get some rest. VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Seldon. Happening now in Asia, the Afghan government says that more than 130 Pakistanis, women and children related to former fighters of the Islamic State terror group, have been returned to other family members and will be going home to Pakistan after being held in a detention center for several weeks. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. The 23 million citizens of Taiwan are preparing for a major election this weekend. It's been a rough campaign, complete with dirty tricks and blustering accusations. And as always, the shadow of Beijing hangs over the proceedings. Earlier, our Ira Melman spoke with VOA Mandarin Service correspondent Adam Xu, who is covering the elections from Taipei.
On Saturday, Taiwan voters are going to cast their vote to elect their president, vice president, and members in their legislature that governs the island that China sees as a province of its own. And like every election, China is a hot topic. And Taiwan's relationship with China is very much seen as a hot button issue, not only regionally but internationally. And this year in particular, we've seen the protests in Hong Kong have had a very big role in the Taiwan people's perception regarding China. Let's just move back, let's look back in 2018 in Taiwan's local election. The opposition party, KMT, won by a landslide, and it was seen as a referendum on the ruling party's performance. And the incumbent president, Chai Ing-wen, indeed resigned as her role as the party's chairwoman. But since the Hong Kong protests, President Chai's favorability has increased, and Hong Kong protests is being touted by Chai Ing-wen as a predicament for Taiwan. She's trying to make the case that Taiwan will be very much like Hong Kong if it loses its independence from Chinese rule. And the opposition KMT says her claim is exaggerated, and they believe that it's unrealistic for Taiwan to decouple from China economically and culturally. And we'll see if this trend will continue in the general election come Saturday.
What is mainland China's role in all this? And if they are not playing an official role, what kind of attitude do they have about the election that is forthcoming?
Mainland China has been very hostile towards the incumbent president, Chai Ing-wen. And we know that that Beijing has infiltrated in the media environment in Taiwan very, very, very deeply and have control over many of the influential newspapers. There's claims that Beijing controls media groups, and even cyber groups are spreading disinformation, especially on social media. And it's very obvious that Beijing is trying to, through many different ways, infiltrate this environment, attacking Chai Ing-wen. Since last year, Chai Ing-wen's approval rating has increased. Because Beijing is trying to sell its so-called one country, two system political arrangement to Taiwan, but that effort has been proved it's not been accepted by the Taiwanese people. Even the opposition party, the KMT, has denounced the one country, two system arrangement. But generally, people believe that she will win this election, but we will see.
Adam Hsu with VOA's Mandarin Service.
Your requests, your dedications, and interviews and performances by your favorite music superstars. It's Border Crossings. This is Larry London. Be sure to tune in every Monday through Friday at 15 hours Universal Time on VOA or online at voanews.com. You've got control. Border Crossings, weekdays at 15 hours Universal Time at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This news alert from VOA Asia. The Taliban said on Thursday that it believes escalating military tensions between the United States and Iran are unlikely to hurt the insurgent group's negotiations with Washington aimed at ending the war in Afghanistan. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. And VOA Asia continues. A mysterious pneumonia outbreak that has struck dozens of people in China and worried thousands more apparently is from the same family of viruses as the deadly severe acute respiratory syndrome, or SARS. This, at least, according to a new report by Chinese scientists. They say a new coronavirus is responsible for the outbreak in Wuhan, finding the virus in 15 of 57 patients. Dr. Anthony Fauci is chief of the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Diseases, part of the U.S. National Institutes of Health, and he spoke with our Ira Melman.
Well, it's pretty clear right now that the Chinese authorities have identified a virus as the cause of this syndrome, which is characterized by fever and pneumonia with pulmonary infiltrates demonstrated on X-ray. The virus is a coronavirus, which is a class of viruses that range from causing the common cold to causing SARS. A new coronavirus several years ago caused the severe acute respiratory syndrome in China, which we refer to as SARS, as well as the Middle East respiratory syndrome, or MERS, which is described in the Middle East. Each of those two syndromes were caused by a relatively new virus within the broader category of coronavirus. Right now, we know that the Chinese investigators have made the determination that the syndrome in several of those individuals who have severe pulmonary disease and fever in China has been caused and is caused by a new coronavirus. The interesting thing about the current virus that we're seeing in Wuhan in China does not appear to spread, certainly not readily and maybe not at all, from human to human, because there have been no cases of infection of healthcare workers who were taking care of the people with this disease, which is unlike SARS, in which the healthcare workers were vulnerable to getting infected when they were taking care of people with this disease.
Is it possible for this type of virus to change so it does become contagious among human beings?
Well, certainly that's always a possibility, that a virus will adapt itself to better transmissibility from human to human, which is one of the reasons why the health authorities in China and in the surrounding countries are being very diligent and vigilant in screening people who are coming from China who have a fever and a possible syndrome that's compatible with this respiratory syndrome in Wuhan.
So I take it that the worry among the Chinese that the Lunar New Year is coming up and millions of people are going to be traveling on buses and trains and everything. So you say there's basically no worry about that now, right?
I wouldn't say no worry, but I would say it would be minimal, because what we're seeing now is no real indication that there's ready, efficient spread from human to human. But unless something changes now and the virus does become much more amenable to spreading from person to person, the risk of big spread from feast days like the Lunar New Year are minimal. However, that does not mean that we should not be very diligent in our making sure that we are aware that this could happen.
NIAID Director Dr. Anthony Fauci. Finally, since October, hundreds of thousands of Lebanese citizens have taken to the streets of Beirut to protest what they say is a corrupt political system that has failed to provide even the most basic of services. But without much media coverage, protesters are using social media to get the word out. VOA's Betty Ayoub reports.
From Hong Kong to Chile to Iraq to Lebanon, leaderless movements have erupted in recent months over frustration with injustice and corruption.
This revolution, like in Hong Kong, is about choices. The choice is, do you want to be part of what you call the free world, the West, if you want to call it that way, or do you want to be part of the monolithic Dark East?
Eli Khoury, founder and CEO of Quantum Group, says most of the Lebanese media is affiliated with political groups, and that means biased coverage of the demonstrations. Lebanese protesters created an independent outlet that serves as a platform for their news and website guides to the revolution.
Most of this revolution is happening on WhatsApp, really. So people are organizing themselves, debating the issues, doing whatever they need to do on WhatsApp, and then posting it on the rest of outward social media, if you want.
When Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah said the United States and other foreign governments were financing the protest movement, protesters responded with a social media campaign, "I am a Lebanese citizen, and I am funding the revolution." From women's marches to human chains, the revolution has been very active and organized, but remains without leadership.
It's only smart not to name your leadership because they can kill them, they can character assassinate them, they can jail them. And we've seen that happen a million times, so people have learned.
In 2005, a series of political assassinations targeted influential Lebanese leaders who opposed the Syrian regime in Lebanon. Victims included Gibran Tweny, a politician and editor-in-chief of the newspaper An-Nahar. Tweny's daughter, also a politician and journalist, says her father would be proud of the patriotism that has united Lebanese in this revolutionary movement.
15 years after they killed him, he's still present, he's still here in the heart of the people. Maybe they wanted people like him. They wanted people who are thinking of the country, of the best for the country, of a free Lebanon.
But An-Nahar is struggling to survive amid Lebanon's economic and political crisis. The newspaper has launched a campaign, hashtag DonateInc, asking readers to support an independent press and let journalists continue their work.
If you want to be free, if you don't want to be funded by a political party or leader or anything, you have to have your freedom and to ask people to donate ink because we need to survive, we have to continue, we have to fight, and the journalists, they are really fighters.
There is a media blackout today of the ongoing protests throughout the country. But social media and dedicated journalists remain committed to delivering the news every way that they can. Betty Ayoub reporting for Voice of America.
And that is VOA for today and for this week. And what a week it's been. Here's hoping the weekend brings you some measure of peace. We'll be back with you again on Monday. We hope you'll join us then as well. And until then, be well.